Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Cash That. This is your host, Joe Delera. I am joined by Prop Bomb for this episode. But before we get into that, this episode is obviously once again brought to you by our good friends at Props.Cash. Props.Cash, absolute best in the business for player prop betting. You need them in your corner, in your phone, on your desktop. You can get them for the NBA with the playoffs. You can get WNBA, which is starting up now, for MLB, NHL, and obviously NFL when that gets started. And you can get that all for 25% off your first month with code DELERA25. It's the best in the business. I use it every day, and you guys should too. But guys, I'm joined by Prop Bomb. It's been a minute here. It's been a minute since we've had Prop Bomb on the show, but obviously good friend to Cash That podcast. Prop Bomb, how you doing?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm great to be on here, Joe. I always want to pay tribute. I mean, anytime I come on here, you were the first podcast I've ever done. So, any way I can come back and help you out, I'll do it. And I'm always like behind the scenes saying, "Hey, Joe, let me get on the show." And it's a good time.
I know we're always chopping it up. Basketball.
Yeah. We always.
Talk it's nice stuff. It's nice to translate some of the text conversations, a couple phone calls to, you know, for you guys to get, you can kind of get into our brains here. So, Bomb and I have, we talked for about 30 seconds before we recorded. I was like, yeah. This is the rundown. This is what we're going to do. But we are recording within 20, 30 minutes of the Mavericks Timberwolves game one finishing. And this is going to be like our live reaction. I thought this game was an awesome game. It felt like a battle. It just felt like there was a punch thrown like by each team, and it was just a matter of like who was going to get the last one in. What did you think about this game? Were you surprised that Dallas was able to win? And what do you think was your number one takeaway just watching these teams play?
I thought the Mavs were going to run away with it after like the third quarter. Cat hit a lot of three pointers, even like from the logo. I mean, he was automatic. Ant, Reggie Miller, like every single time he had a chance to, when Ant had the ball, it was like, "Hey guys, I think he's tired from guarding Kyrie Irving."
It's crazy.
Couldn't shut up about it. But that is true. That is something that we should take away from this game one, is that it's definitely taking a toll on him guarding Kyrie Irving. It's going to probably tire him out towards the second half. Jaden McDaniels was terrific.
Unbelievable.
They got him going. It was probably important that the role players got going, especially him in the first quarter. And another big takeaway was the Kyle Anderson minutes. I mean, he was a complete ghost in the Denver Nuggets series. And looks like he's going to be the second line of defense if Jaden McDaniels ever gets in foul trouble on Luka Doncic. So this is definitely a series for him. I was looking to attack his PRA props in game one. Fortunately for Kyle Anderson, it was only available on two books. So just something to keep an eye out on. I think he's
his PRA was low. It was like five and a half or something.
One and a half assists. Like,
yeah, that's like, did you breathe? Did you play? Like, did you play minutes like at all?
Yeah. They seriously thought he'd play like 7 minutes. But I mean, I had a feeling it was going to be like a little bit slower paced compared to like, you know, Denver. And Denver does play slow, but
it was just a different game. A different game too, because I think that like one of the things that I liked looking at this matchup, Luka had 33 points. It was an interesting 33 though, because Kyrie Irving obviously started off red hot, and then he just like stopped. Like he was just like second half just like wasn't super impactful in the game. The thing that I thought was interesting about Luka in this spot though. Yeah, like Luka really came on in like the late third quarter, and really the whole fourth quarter. But when you watch the game, they were trying to put Jaden McDaniels on him. And especially like in the fourth quarter, there were times like Luka was like, "I don't want to get out of here. Like, I don't want to get trapped. I don't want to get blitzed. I don't want to have a double team." Because that seemed to be, I don't want to call it effective at like stopping him, but it was effective at getting the ball out of his hands. And Luka's
saw that a lot too.
Yeah, and Luka's smart. Like, he's like, look, if you're going to send doubles at me, I have plenty of good shooters. Like, I'll get the ball out of my hands. But at the end of the game, he's still got, like, that dog in him. And he's like, nope. Get out of here with your double teams. Like, I'm going to take this guy one-on-one. And it was evident that as good as McDaniels is, Luka, like, just lowered his shoulder into him, was like, nope, get out of here. This is my court. This is my time to shine. I don't know what button Minnesota is going to push now, because I think still it's like the double, like trying to send doubles at him all game. Like, maybe that's the best way to do it and just say somebody else beat us. But you know, when they were doing that, Kyrie Irving was going crazy. So, you know, I think it's definitely a little bit tougher to navigate. What did you think about Luka and like what Dallas was able to do on offense?
I just think it's a little bit different than what he was used to seeing in the OKC series. And that was his primary defender was Lu Dort. Now, don't get me wrong. Lu Dort is definitely shorter than Jaden McDaniels, but what he does make up for is his toughness, his strength, his ability to like stay on Luka, even when Luka is back and down. And, you know, as great as McDaniels is, I don't think he kind of matches what Lu Dort has in that. So maybe that kind of
takes the size.
He has the size. Well, he has the length, but I don't know if he has like the strength of Lu Dort.
Yeah, like
you know?
Lu Dort looks like he could play like a linebacker. Yeah. He's a bigger dude, and like I think, and that's the thing. Like in this matchup, it was so odd because McDaniels being on Luka, I was like, that seems like a concern. Luka's got like 50 pounds on him. And then even with Kyrie, like Ant wanting to guard Kyrie, it's an interesting decision because Kyrie's so fucking fast still. Like he still can move. And it seems like that's tough for a guy like for Ant when he's like,
that was
really
definitely like Jason Kidd's maybe that was his point of emphasis. Like first quarter, it's always been Luka, you know, you do everything. And then Kyrie is like, let me be the facilitator. Let's maybe try to catch. Maybe that was it. Honestly, let's try to catch him off guard. Because they're probably game planning that Luka is going to be the first in charge of like taking over. And it kind of caught him off guard that Kyrie was. So maybe that's why he kind of had that quick start.
I think that's a good point. Cause like Kyrie played most of the first quarter. Luka kind of goes through his normal rotation where he starts, finishes, and then plays the majority of the second quarter. So those are all like some notable things. But we did see – it was like interesting because we saw a couple like Exum minutes. We saw a couple Tim Hardaway Jr. minutes.
Too. That was another thing as well, Exum. I think they needed him a lot. I think Exum can really carve a role this series, unlike the last series. He just needs to be reliable on the spot up shots. That's the thing that I think if he's reliable on the spot up shots, he immediately is ahead of Jaden Hardy in the rotation solely because of his defense. Like it's going to definitely be needed.
Well, I mean, think about it this way too. Like Tim Hardaway Jr. played 11 minutes and was just, he had a plus seven in terms of plus minus, but I think it just really had to do with the fact that he caught a couple Luka runs, basically. Like he caught him right at the beginning of the second quarter when Luka started the second quarter with a made three, and then he caught him in the beginning of the fourth quarter. So, like, it seems like a little bit of like a false positive almost in a way. When I'm looking at this game and like when I'm looking at the series kind of moving forward, game one to me was like just a bad Minnesota spot. Coming off of game seven, you have a Mavericks team that won in six. So they had a rest advantage, even though they had to go travel and play on the road. But you know, Minnesota was in a war with the reigning champs. And you know, they were able to come out of it, but that takes a toll on you emotionally, physically, everything. Whereas, you know, the Dallas Mavericks, they were able to kind of control their series from start to finish, against the Oklahoma City Thunder. Looking at the way, like looking at what you saw today, I don't know if you had a lean on either team to win the series, to win the Western Conference. Is it the same, or do you feel like a little bit weaker on the position? Like, what do you think of the series overall?
I still, even though it's really tough now that they lost a little bit of their home court advantage, I still think Timberwolves have enough depth, and I think answers, frankly enough, to come back from this. So I still think that the I think that the Wolves still advance. I could talk a little bit about more like what some things that I would have adjusted or some things that I wasn't like, I don't understand like the Nickeil Alexander-Walker minutes. Like I was really that was one of my props I took from game one in the Discord was his over 6.5 points. I really thought that they were going to, I really thought that they were going to like really use him for defense. He is so lengthy. Like he could guard Kyrie. He's very like, he's very like just quick in general. And they played him 16 minutes. I thought they'd play him 24 plus.
Part of what my thought is like, I wonder, does that have to do with the fact that McDaniels was just shooting like the cover off the ball? You know, like,
I mean, he was 0 for 4 from 3, Alexander Walker. So offensively, it didn't make sense for him to be out there. But like, if he just gets his shot going, like he can get extra minutes, and that could hurt Kyrie Irving, because the way that the Mavs, the box score looks like is that they scored, and how it always is in their season is they scored 70% of their points through two players, Kyrie and Luka. And, you know, for the first time this series, PJ Washington wasn't that much of a factor.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say that too, because I was talking to Steve Keach about this, and Steve was saying how he was like, I don't know if PJ Washington is going to be like as meaningful of a player in this series, just based on, you know, the shots that Minnesota gives up, like the shot profile, that type of thing. And, you know, he wasn't really as impactful. I think his defense was fine. But the scoring was obviously dramatically different than those like monster explosion games against Oklahoma City Thunder. When I'm looking at the box score too, I think one of the more notable things is that, like kind of like what you're talking about, like in terms of the rotations, like it's hard because you look at it and you're like, well, where do the minutes come from for these guys? Because they have a rotation where you have a starting lineup of Karl Anthony Towns, Anthony Edwards, Gobert, Conley, McDaniels. And, you know, Ant is obviously going to play. Cat is also going to play. And it's hard to say, like, you know, Rudy is like one of those guys who's like can be limited scheme wise, right? Rudy was a plus 10. He was the best plus minus on the team.
Yeah, I was surprised by that as well. Yeah.
So it's like you look at that and you're like, okay, well, like where do these minutes come from? Because Conley is the only other guy that can kind of create offense besides Ant. And, you know, McDaniels, if he's shooting incredibly, you don't want to take him off the floor. So it's like, where do the minutes come from? I felt like this could be, you know, when I did the preview episode with Brandon, you know, we both felt like this could be a good Naz Reid like series, or like, you know, and then we had some other thoughts about like Kyle Anderson, like maybe Kyle Anderson can play. But it's like you look at the rotations and you're like, well, who's coming out of this? And like
Ant's the lock. Ant played 42 minutes, and look at this, like we're talking about how them bounce. I mean, if Ant scores 24 points, like it's a different story, and the Timberwolves would have won. Like he scored 19 points, and they only lost by 3 points. You know,
yeah. So I maybe that's what it is, really. And it's just like, you know, you expect Ant to be a little bit better, because I mean, he was 5 for 12. This is interesting too. He took 16 shots, but 12 of them were threes. Like. He was only 1 for 4 otherwise from the field, which is like, that seems like an odd stat. Like he's not a guy that only pulls up from three. Yeah. But so maybe that's something to look out for next game. Like maybe 3 points,
for 12. Yeah. This just goes again to the Alexander Walker minutes. Like, you know, Ant is like a cocky, he comes off as a cocky guy, and you know, he said, oh, I want to guard Kyrie Irving, but if we're being honest, and we want him to conserve his energy to be a little bit more effective, it's got to be Nickeil Alexander-Walker who does that, and not him like all the time. It should be like a 50-50 type like team effort. That's why I'm saying like I'm just so surprised that he didn't get that much run.
Yeah, I think the craziest thing is too, him and Lively are right now, they're tied for the series lead in rebounds at 11. Like if you had to go and you looked at and you're like, who's going to lead the game and after game one in rebounds, I would not have had really either of them, honestly, like on this list. So definitely a little bit interesting. But what I wanted to do is let you know, we kind of fleshed out like some of the things from this game one. And it just in terms of like, it's easier for the listeners, right? Like this is for the listeners. For sure. I want to talk about, before we get into a little bit of game one from Indiana and Boston and what our game two, some of our picks are, some of our angles are, I wanted to talk to you briefly about what you do differently, like in the postseason. Cause I think that NBA basketball, the regular season is its own game. The playoffs are like a totally different game. What are some things that you do like a little bit differently? Because like you're getting the same matchup over and over and over again. And there's this inclination to be like, well, this is a good matchup. Like this is a good spot for this guy. Like it hit last game, it should continue to hit. And that can kind of become problematic because you're looking at the same, the data is all the same.
Yeah. I don't think that's a healthy thing to do. I can think of like a good callback to that is in the 76ers Knicks series. Yeah. Everyone. And I kind of fell victim to it too. The Josh Hart threes, right? Like, you know how it was a consistent hit rate over 1.5. Yeah. All it takes is like, for a scheme to be switched or, you know, one adjustment and that angle that you have could be completely erased. It's a game of chess. Like these two teams are going to be adjusting back and forth. Like what you may see in game one and you think could be replicated in game two. It could still be the same thing, but the other team is now doing something differently that the, you know, so it's just like a lot of different pieces, moving pieces.
Yeah. And I mean, I feel like the best way to kind of get a grip on it is like, I'm not like one of those guys that's like, you got to watch the games. Because I think in the regular season, there's only so many games you can watch, right? Like you're not watching every game. In the playoffs, like you almost have to, because there's so much like nuance to each and every game. What do you find to be helpful when, you know, you're watching the games and like, trying to take something from it? Because it's like we're fans, we like to watch the game to watch the game, but I do feel like you are picking up on some things like as the game's going on, you're like, oh, that's interesting, or that's weird. Like how do you complement that?
Again, it's like kind of like what I was saying earlier, like the whole picking up on rotations, like picking up on some, I call them outliers, or just like things that you're not used to seeing, or not, maybe not outliers is not the right word, but like Kyle Anderson, right? Like I see Kyle Anderson game two, I think he's going to have a larger role. Books may not have caught up to it. Maybe the line's 7.5 ERA, you know, just certain things like that. Oh, game one, the Pacers and the Knicks series, Siakam gets in foul trouble. So X, you know, Y happens or whatever, like a cause and effect. Next game, Siakam may not get in foul trouble. So maybe what happened last game may not be the same the next game. So we can kind of like take advantage of that the stats didn't tell the full story on. So picking up on things that aren't, you know, like shouldn't have happened. Like game one, you know, Pascal Siakam grabbing 12 rebounds when his rebound line was at 7.5 or something like that, you know?
Yeah, no, I think that that's like super notable too, because like you're looking at these games and you're trying, like you said, you're trying to make these like conclusions and you're trying to make, get these takeaways. And it's like sometimes you watch it and you're just like, man, I can't believe this guy had like this many assists or this many, like it just didn't seem that way. Like didn't feel like they had their fingerprint on the pulse of it, like of the game. And then there were certain sometimes you see things and you're like, oh, they got to stop that. Like they can't let that happen. Like this is insane. Yeah. This guy got whatever he wanted. And one of the things that I thought was interesting in game one, you know, of the Pacers and the Celtics series, and one of the things that I think, you know, can change, because it goes into the rotation stuff that you talked about, the rotations from like one series to another don't always translate. And same even with some of the strategy, like you mentioned with Kyrie Irving, his under 4.5 first quarter points was a cash cow. It was just automatic, like last series.
For sure.
This series, immediately, it's a loser, right? One of the things that I took away from the rotations in the Celtics Pacers game one, and it like almost screwed up my cap, was I had been on Tatum over 7.5 first quarter points, specifically because he's playing the whole first quarter. When he checked out with like 8 minutes, you know, he checked out like seven or are you kidding? Like, what's going on here? So, you know, there's like little things like that where they don't, it doesn't always translate. Luckily,
that's what I'm saying, though. It's like you're immediately, you're used to seeing a certain thing and then you see that and that's good. Like that's what someone who should watch and like are trying to do playoff props is exactly what you just did. Like, okay, that doesn't seem right.
Because the windup is he cashed the prop and then now I think they bumped it to 8.5 at some point before game one. It's still at 8.5 for game two. It's not a play that I'm gonna be on, specifically because I'm like, this rotation's different. I don't like that anymore. Like it's changing my analysis for like how I wanna tackle this market, because, you know, like if he is only going to play 10 minutes, sometimes that means, cause like somebody, you know, maybe somebody's taking free throws at like 9 minutes and they're like, all right, well, Tatum, like let's go. We're just going to turn the rotation right now. So it's like the downside, I think there's even more downside to that. So that was like one of the things that I noticed in game one. When you were looking at game one of Pacers Celtics, there were so many things that went on. Like Boston really like stole that game. And honestly, like I want to say, like it felt like it felt more like Indiana lost the game. Like they had it won, and then they just blew it. What did you think about game one? And to me, like it felt damning for Indiana's chances moving forward to like at all. Like they had slim chances in the first place, but you can't lose a game like that where you have them, like you had it. Like what do you think about the series like overall, and then what did you take away, like, or what if anything you took away from game one in particular?
It's just the Celtics, it's just without Kristaps Porzingis, they're missing in a whole entire like dimension to their offense, and they are honestly very beatable without Porzingis on there. We saw it with the Miami Heat game two, like in the Cavs game two, the teams just have to make their shots. And now they're playing a team that actually has shooters in the Pacers. Like they have guys that, unlike the Cavs or like, you know, or the Heat. So if the shots fall in, then it's kind of scary for the Celtics. But, aside from that, yeah, definitely very costly. They fumbled the bag. They did the whole Reggie Miller choke the Pacers. But I don't know if it's like over yet. I mean, look, they're supposed to lose these games. They were what 10 point underdogs going in, maybe even 13 points. Yeah. But they are like the Cinderella team. So I don't know if it's going to hurt them too much. But yeah, what I definitely did notice a lot, though, one of my biggest takeaways from the Celtics, Al Horford, both offensively and defensively. Talk about defensively first for Al Horford. Definitely missing Xavier Tillman out there. Game one, I think he had to leave because
personal.
I'm
not sure. Yeah.
We gotta like make sure if he's playing a game two or not, because they can't really roll anyone out there. They can't put Luke Kornet out there. So it's
because they said he might not. He still might not play. I'm not sure what the reasoning is, but we'll see.
Yeah, but to my point, like they're gonna really need Xavier Tillman out there because, you're gonna need Horford for like 38 plus minutes. Like that, I think he's gonna have like a high ceiling of playing time. Offensively, he's great because we were just talking about it off air before coming into the podcast. Like. I thought he was not going to get those spot up looks because the Pacers don't really allow a lot of catch and shoot. But like, there were some possessions where they were more so worried about Tatum getting inside, kind of doubling him, and Horford had those like wide open looks, and he took 12 three pointers. Like they were just kind of giving it to him. A lot of them came in the first half. They did look like they were fixing it in the second half, but. Defensively is the most important part, and the Pacers were targeting him every single possession. They were switching on to him. They were like, Halliburton was getting a lot of his assist conversions. Like to players that could drive against Horford, who is probably, what is he, like 40 years old? Like, you got to think he's gassed playing 30.
He's getting up in the second half.
Like, they were taking advantage of that. And something that I, maybe it's like, you know, fourth quarter Pacers, something, if that fatigue is going to get into Horford, they're just going to keep targeting him, at least for game two. But that was something that I noticed. What about you?
I'm with you, like, in terms of attacking Horford, because it's something that they, like, really went after, especially in the second half and, like, in overtime.
Yeah.
The guy that I like, to me, like, because in overtime got a little funky for Indiana. I think that once Boston tied the game, it was like they were like, when Jaylen Brown hit that shot, I was like, oh, this game's over. Like, Boston, like, this game's over. Yeah. They're cooked. Yeah. Like, you know, like, that was just, like, worst case scenario. But in the fourth quarter, Pascal Siakam went fucking crazy.
He picked it up. He picked it up. He was quiet.
Yeah. He was 5 of 6 from the field, scored 10 points, 2 boards, 1 assist. Miles Turner was incredible. Like, he was hitting all those pick and pop shots, like, a really good game for him. But I think, like, in this game, I'd be curious to see if they try to hit the Pascal Siakam button, like, early and often. Like, I like him. You know, he scored 24 points in game one. He had 12 rebounds and he had 7 assists. I'm not, like, opposed to a PRA for him. It's high. We're looking at there's a 31.5 at DraftKings and at Caesars. But I really don't hate that look. He had 43 PRA in game one. And to me, getting a guy like him who can go downhill, and you don't, like, they can use Tatum on him to a degree, but it's not really, like, ideal. You don't want Tatum to pick up fouls. Like, you don't want that scenario, right? So I think for Siakam, I don't mind a combo prop, just because, like, I think that there's upside for not only the rebounds, but also the assists and the scoring. I'm comfortable enough, given the fact that, you know, he had 12, his rebounds prop is set at 8.5 here. He had 7 assists, his assist prop is set at 3.5. So yeah. I think that there's, like, enough upside in some of the, like, the secondary stats, like the usage stats, to, like, rationalize getting, like, a 31.5 PRA here. There's some 32.5s in the market right now. Like, FanDuel's got a 32.5. But that was definitely one of the things I was like, I think that was notable. And especially, like, he has the championship pedigree. Like, I think after losing that game, he's the guy on Indiana that's got to be like, yo, let's lock in. We got to try to get game two. It's okay. And kind of come out strong, come out firing.
Yeah. Siakam did, they have an interesting rotation for Siakam. I'm looking, I got to highlight this website. We were talking about this again off air.
Good website.
This website, really, really weird name, but really interesting website. It's called popcornmachine.net. Essentially, it's just like a game flow type website that you can kind of see rotations visually, like how the players checked in, checked out, in their stints when they were in, what their plus minus was. Check this out, though, Joe. Siakam, he was one of the first guys to check out in the first quarter. Looked like he played 6 minutes in the first quarter and didn't come back in until, like, 1 minute left. They played him 6 minutes in the first quarter. Maybe, I don't know, was that by design? But the second quarter, he played 11 of the 12 minutes. But
yeah, I think that's what his rotation is. Yeah, because his rotation, that was a little low, though. He played only 6 minutes. He had been playing, like, closer to 8.5, 9 against like, the Knicks. I think the problem was, did he pick up fouls early?
No fouls.
It was just a weird, like, a little bit of a funky rotation for him. So maybe, like, I would stay away from, like, his first quarter points set at 5.5. I might want to stay away from that for a guy like where we're seeing, it's like, are they doing something different? Yeah. Like, is there a reason that we're doing this?
Yeah. I like to wait for, like, 2 or 3 games until we know what an action, maybe like game 4 or 5 is when you can kind of really see what the first quarter, like, it's tough to really, like,
And it would be one thing if we saw like, all right, well, he picked up two early fouls and that's why they took him out. Or if, you know, or if he continued to play at that like 8.5, 9 minute rotation, you're like, all right, like they're doing the same thing. Like it's yeah. okay. Like I see what they're doing. But to see it drop like that precipitously, I think is interesting. But I also like the fact that like for us, like if we're trying to bet on a Siakam like type of over, I don't mind like grabbing a full game type of play because of like some of the matchups might be better for him in like the second quarter when Boston actually does.
Yeah,
kind of
this
go
is
into
what I was going to suggest too. Like just on another like strain of thought, if we do know that, hey, this is what his first quarter rotations look like, maybe this could be not a pregame like prop bet, but like a mid first quarter. Let me take the over on this because we know that our like, at the end of the first quarter, we know he's going to miss 6 minutes. That's going to take a little bit of his upside. But like now that yeah. we know he's going to play 11 minutes going forward, like you're getting it at his like lowest. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a pretty good way to look at it too. Because I don't mind buying it now. Like just in the event that like they start yeah. off like kind of hitting it pretty early. But yeah. I think you're right. I think that in the playoffs especially, there's some opportunity for live betting. Because yeah. like you know, like certain guys are just gonna play, like they're gonna be leaned on for usage, right? Like yeah. like Luka, for example, in game one, like you saw like really the first, you know, he played okay like to start the game.
Or like Kyrie, kinda came yeah, like take the yeah, live like, over Kyrie, after halftime, like, you know?
Yeah. So it's like there's a couple different ways to kind of play it where you're just like, I don't know, like I don't think he's gonna be able to sustain this, or like this isn't really his rotation. You know, what are we kind of looking at here? Or are they changing defensive coverage like in the middle of the game? Like we see it all mm-hmm. the time. It's just like all of a sudden it's like you're seeing something different. So I think that's definitely like kind of a sharp way to look at it.
Yeah, I will say with Siakam too, on that note, something that I noticed why he kind of did get better. I was kind of reading a little bit of like blog articles from the Pacers that he was really being used on the top a lot as screen, like just for screening. And that would yeah. kind of open up some looks, some jump shot looks. Like he was hitting a lot of jump shots. I saw in the second half, not really like relying on that like drive game that he was going with a lot early. And I think that helped him a lot. I always say with betting on Siakam is like, you just got to hope that he hits his jump shots. That's just the bottom line, you know?
He's always like a little bit of like a tougher, he's always a tougher player to me to like kind of gauge like exactly how well he's going to do. Yeah. Just based on that, like he's not a 3-point shooter. So like, you're not going to catch up on the
yeah,
volume
they weren't
there.
Even him. Yeah.
You know, it's just open. Like, that's just not the scenario. When you were, and one of the things that I always like to look at, like cleaning the glass, for example, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I thought was interesting in this game was Boston took, like they continued to take a ton of threes. Indiana came close in terms of volume to the three-pointers there, but Indiana like took a ton of long mid-range shots. They took 21% of their shots from long mid-range, which is in the 99th percentile of all like teams, games type of situations.
Oh, okay.
That does seem to be like, that is a shot though that like Boston, I think, is comfortable giving up. So it like, it is in that Siakam type of wheelhouse where it's like, look, man, if you can shoot and like, if you can beat us shooting a bunch of long twos, go for it. And, you know, he led the team in shot attempts. He was 12 for 23, but at the same time, 12 for 23, not unsustainable. Like that's a totally like reasonable number for him to shoot 12 for 23. The attempts I think are a little bit high.
Well, free throws. And no, this is also, I mean, he doesn't really take
no free throws.
Free throws, but
yeah.
Yeah.
No free throws. And that was something actually, if you really think about it, right. The free throws were interesting because Indiana doesn't generate free throws. They just flat out, they just don't generate a lot of free throws. They don't attack.
Yeah.
They don't attack the rim at the same type of way. Boston took a lot more free throws than them. That's just kind of just the way that their offenses are run, right? they asked Rick Carlisle about it, and he was like, he said something to the effect of, I don't have anything to say, because my daughter needs, she already has to pay. We already have to pay extra. Like, we already don't have the money to pay for her first year of college or something like that. like you said something to that effect. Right? So yeah. So, that was kind of comical, but, it is interesting. And, you know, when that type of thing happens and there is like such a stark disparity, you do wonder, you're like, is that going to swing a little bit, maybe this game? And the thing that's kind of crazy about it too is, watching game one, it didn't even feel like Indiana wasn't getting free throws. It just felt like,
yeah, that's definitely, you know, so that's offense. An adjustment. Like, that could be something that game one didn't tell you, but you may want to get ahead. Hey, maybe the Pacers do want to attack the rim more than they did last game, you know?
Try to get somebody in foul trouble.
You're going to need to establish a little bit aggressiveness, or else like the Celtics players are just going to like camp in the paint and just wait for you, you know?
100%. And Siakam would be like one of those dudes that I would think would be able to get to the rack, like would be able to drive to the rim, would be able to generate a little bit of contact. So I don't really hate that. But it does, you know, it is interesting, like looking at the game as a whole, saying, you know, like, all right, well, if you're not going to get any of these Boston guys in foul trouble, their rotations are probably going to be like kind of similar, you know, and I know that you mentioned, I want to talk about Al Horford for a minute, because I know you mentioned, you know, like I think he scored 9 of his points in the first half, 6 of his points in the second half. His threes prop to me seems good. Like, I mean, he took an obscene amount of threes in game one. I don't know if he's going to take double digit threes again, but when we look at Al Horford over the course of really the whole season, when Horford is taking, let's say, you know, cause he took 12 against Indiana in game one, he took 13 against, Cleveland in game five. When Horford takes 6 or more threes this season, he's had, well, they say his line set at 1.5 here, right? So when he's taken 6 or more threes, his hit rate just skyrockets. He's made 1.5 threes. His line's 1.5 threes, but it's minus like 200. So let's not even go with that, right? The 2.5 is plus 130. He's had 3 or more threes in 14 of 18 games this season when he's taken 6 or more. So like, and I think a lot of that just has to do
with what would you say his max is. So like 6 is like his bare minimum. Then what would you say like his max? Like 10, 11?
10, 11. Yeah. Like, I mean, I guess he'd get up to 12, 13, like if he's feeling it, but it does feel like to be on the high end for sure. He's doing this, the majority of these games, really all these games are without Porzingis for the most part. So that's like when he's getting this volume, that's when he's getting these looks. I don't see like a real reason necessarily why he's not going to continue to take them. And you know, he's not like a primary offensive weapon for Boston. But at the same time, he's an outlet. He's like a release valve. So especially at that number, I'm definitely going to grab the 2.5 threes. I think that there's a limitation on the upside just based on the fact that like, he's not really the guy that's going to make like 4, 5, 6 threes. Like, sure. Like he can, he did against Cleveland, but to me, like, I think the three feels like a cap. It makes me I always get a little nervous about that where I'm like, well, I feel like I'm betting a guy's ceiling, even if they are continuing to hit that. What are your thoughts on that? Like, would you rather play the threes at like the plus number, or, you know, his points line is set at 11.5. Which is a number he's really only hit a couple times recently, when he's taking say like 6 or more threes, he's then hitting that at a much higher clip. But
he was definitely in the first half, like Al Horford Atlanta Hawks version. Like he was,
yeah.
I mean, awesome. he wasn't just a spot up player, and it was pissing me off because I was on his under, and I learned the hard way that was the wrong play.
I'm really pouring salt in the wound here.
Yeah, full transparency, of course. But I mean, they were like involving him in post up actions a lot. Like, it wasn't just like threes. I mean, he was getting and ones. He was getting to the line. So maybe the points would be kind of how I go. I don't know if you could do 1.5, maybe 2.5 is what I would do, like, for the threes. Just to like stay on the same Celtics players. Drew Holiday had 28 points.
Yes.
Is that something that you think is sustainable? Is that something that you think was by design? What's your thoughts on that, Joe?
That, like, it really threw me off, honestly. His volume was up. He took 16 field goals. He had 16 attempts. He's really not had nearly as many attempts as that, like, over the course of the season. He's averaging 9.9. He's only had, double digit attempts, and not really a ton of games this season. So that was the only thing I'm a little more skeptical about, seeing whether or not that's replicable for him, especially because they have so many other guys. And it felt like Tatum, he put up another, like, a big number. What do you have, 36 points? But it didn't feel like he was really into the offense as much. And Drew Holiday was used a little bit more as, like, a stabilizing type of force. And as for, you know, like, Derek White, like, kind of had, like, a little bit slower game for him. He still only had 15 points. I think it's, you know, it's possible Drew Holiday can replicate it. His points line is what, at 13.5? I don't hate it. He performed really well in the last series too against Cleveland. And it just kind of feels like one of those series where he's going to be maybe able to take, like, Tyrese Halliburton to school a little bit. Because, you know, like, at the end of the, like, in overtime, when Halliburton had that one turnover where he just, like, I don't know what happened. He just, like, stopped dribbling the ball. But it was like Drew Holiday was just all over him. Maybe that's a thing. And the only other thing that I would say about it is, though, is Drew, like, he was really good in the first half, but in the second half, he put up 18 points, which was, like, I was like, that's a number. Like, that's a big number for him to score in the second half. So, you know, I think the 13.5 is fair. I don't know if I really have a great lean on it. What are your thoughts on Drew?
I mean, it just comes down to, like, the Celtics are really tightening up their rotation. Not only missing Porzingis, Hauser seems to have a diminishing role on the team. So I think shots are going to have to be absorbed just with the tighter type of rotation that they have. I was also surprised that they didn't really run out Pritchard that much. He wasn't that involved. Pritchard seems to be, like, the guy that they go to towards the end of the end of the first, beginning of the second quarter. He kind of gets,
like, all right, it seemed. Yeah.
But aside from that, it's really, like, four players: Tatum, you know, Brown, and then Derek White, who I was just surprised that the volume wasn't that there. Maybe it was, like, the spot up looks. So that's the thing, actually. The spot up looks were a little bit more contested with him as compared to with Horford. I just think they didn't really care to defend Horford than care to defend Derek White in the perimeter. So when you shut down that kind of, like, outlet of scoring,
there's only so much you can do.
Yeah. Someone has to kind of, like, make up for it. And maybe that's kind of where Drew Holiday made up for it. Granted, also too, with Drew Holiday, I noticed a lot of times he was on Miles Turner defending him in the center spot. And he had a lot of putbacks. Like, I saw he had 7 rebounds. Maybe the rebounds could be another angle. I don't know what that is.
I can tell you in a sec.
5.5 rebounds. Line. He had 7 last game.
Yeah, and he had, let's see how many chances he had. He had 14 chances.
Yeah, so, 14 chances.
That's definitely notable. And even his assists, he had 8 assists on 13 potentials. I think the point that you're kind of raising about Drew is interesting, because you're basically saying, I think that his rotation's a little bit longer. I feel like he's playing a little bit more like to me, like whenever I see like those with like a usage stat, I like the rebounds and assists. So we're looking at Drew, his rebounds and assists line is at 10.5. He had 15 last game. If we actually look back, obviously some of these numbers are a little bit different because it's with Milwaukee. But he's actually had in his last 10 games head to head against Indiana, he's had over 10.5 in 8 of them, and he's averaging 13.4 rebounds and assists. So a couple of those are like bigger spikes. Realistically, back when he was with Milwaukee last season, he had a couple games at like 18. But even this year, if we look at it, he had 11, 9, 11, 12, 9, 15. So I don't really mind that. The rebounds is really kind of where he's made a living, because he's had this season, he's gone over his 5.5 rebounds line in, what is that, 5 of 6 games so far against of this season, rather. So that's definitely one of the other things that I noticed.
I have one more thing, though.
All right, slight technical difficulties there, but we were talking a little bit off air in between, you know, scheming for you guys, obviously. But Prop Bomb had a Derek White angle that he kind of wanted to touch on for this game.
So with Derek White, game one, this was more so of a lean for me. Like we always talk, like you never want to go all in just without seeing the footage. So I was like, okay, let me see if this like logic makes sense, and it actually happened. The way I see it with the Pacers is that they're kind of filtering the points inside the paint. They're filtering the points to Jaylen Brown, to Jason Tatum, and they're kind of shutting down Derek White, who was kind of talking about a little bit earlier, what they were like caring to defend him. And also they're playing a lot faster too, the Pacers. And I think they need another guy that kind of creates the offensive playmakes to kind of handle that pace uptick. And Derek White has been that guy as far as passing. Last game he had eight assists. He had 9 assists last game. Derek White had 9 assists last game. The game before that, where he played the Pacers without Porzingis, he also had, I think, 8 or 9 assists. The line's 4.5 assists. I think it's still in effect. I think it's still factoring in the Miami Heat series where like he didn't get that in any of the games. So it's just a hit rate thing. That's kind of why it hasn't caught up yet. A lot of his assists are coming to 2-pointers. They're not coming to 3-pointers, and a lot of Jaylen Brown's kind of getting to his way there. He's really playmaking a lot, and he's stepping that up. This is the thing. Right when it opened up, it was -118. Now I'm seeing it's -150.
I don't mind juice. And honestly, I think a lot of times too, like if you're the way you're kind of projecting this, you're basically saying like I don't think you're saying that like he's not going to get 6. You know what I mean? Like obviously it's better if you got the 4.5. What about this angle for you? Because this is it's a little bit of a pivot off it, and it's a little bit more variable, I would say, because it's a head-to-head market. You can bet him right now at DraftKings -145 head-to-head against TJ McConnell for assists. So I think it's a little bit, it's like close in terms of the juice, right? But I think that the angle is better based on upside. Like McConnell, like he'll have those games like every so often where, you know, he's dropping a bunch of dimes, but they have what I think is interesting. You can kind of determine from the market, right? So you can bet total like over under, which I think is interesting. It's over 9.5. So it's a combined for the two players, 9.5. You could even bet Derek White -0.5 at -125. I think that given this type of market, I'd rather just bet like the money line, or so to speak. But do you have any thoughts on maybe like that type of market to try to like, maybe, you know, it's a little bit different, but I think that McConnell, it was one of the first games of the playoffs. He was actually on minus in terms of plus minus when he was on the floor in game one. So, you know, maybe in game two, maybe you just see like a little bit less of McConnell, or, you know, maybe we see like the minutes reduced a little bit. Is that maybe an angle for you?
Yeah. And I'm looking at the juice too. 4.5 over on Derek White is -150. Meanwhile, under 4.5 is 4.5, but for McConnell, it's -140s on the under. So
yeah,
it's kind of leaning opposite ways for both players, which makes sense. What's the money line? Is that like even money? Is it plus odds?
It's -145 at like to okay. even to get them even or like to, you know, all things being equal. I think that like maybe it's an angle. I don't know, you know, you could even like, I don't know if you want to try to parlay them or something like that. Like, I don't think I necessarily want to do that where I'm parlaying the two of them, you know, but I'm just kind of like spitballing here because I think that some of those head-to-head markets are interesting just because like Derek White's a guy that like we know like he's going to play, like he's going to get his minutes. Like he's going to play. Whereas McConnell, actually, if we look at game one, he had 4 assists, but only had 5 potentials as opposed to Derek mm-hmm. White, who had 9 assists on 12 potentials. So that's definitely something that could
be more value. A little bit, of course, though, it's not ideal that it's like -165, but
yeah,
that actually could be more of an edge. Those are fun ones for sure. The head to heads. Appreciate you for bringing that up for sure. I think the listeners will appreciate that too.
It's just a different angle for people, and you know, I think it's interesting too because you can even bet like assists per game, right? So, and I think this is actually indicative of kind of what you're talking about though, and kind of about this prop. Like obviously Derek White had 9 assists in game one, so it's a little bit inflated. McConnell only had 4, but Derek White's over under for the series is set at 5.6 assists per game, whereas McConnell's is set at 4.4. So obviously a lot of that has to do with what happened in game one. But I think that's notable. And then honestly, even when we look at this in terms of like series rebound or series assist leader, Derek White clearly has like a much higher floor. He's 12-1. He's second to Halliburton. McConnell's 75-1. it's like, you know, it's just dramatically different in terms of what we're looking at there. But I don't mind laying juice on a prop, especially if I think that maybe there's a little bit of like upside in terms of the alts, you know, where you could bet like a 6+, since that 4.5, maybe a 6+ to try to even out a little bit of the juice.
Yeah. You know, you can either do the head to head, the 6+. I mean, that is kind of the early look I have on that. You mind if I transition to this other one I had?
Yeah. Tell me about your next one.
Okay, so this next one I had was Jason Tatum. This is a prop that I took last game. Fortunately, I lost because of dead heat rules. He tied with another player. I like him to lead game two amongst all players in rebounds. So essentially, rebound leader. I believe that's +120. So you get that at plus odds, and it's more so like a line reading game. Like you're kind of just like you're getting the hints here. His rebound line right now is at 10.5. The next highest rebound line is Siakam, but it's on the under 8.5. So you got a 2 rebound gap there. And it just makes sense, like just looking at the last game. Tatum had 12 rebounds. Siakam had 12 rebounds, but the game was like really close. I mean, there's going to be some regression from the Pacers, which will help Tatum grab more rebounds in the second half. And I also think that the Celtics shot pretty poor, but will shoot a little bit better, especially being at home, which will hurt Pascal Siakam. So that's why I'm liking the rebound on that.
I think that's a great point because when we look at what Indiana did shooting the basketball, they had an effective field goal percentage of 60.1% in game one, which was in the 84th percentile of like all games, right? Boston 55.6. That's not like insane for them, right? If we look at, you know, what teams have done against Boston, when we look at Boston, they have allowed opponents to shoot 53.6% in terms of effective field goal percentage against them during the postseason. And that's, you know, they've had some spike games like where, you know, with what their opponents have done. But over the course of the regular season, I think maybe that's even a little bit more like useful right now. Boston was second in the league, 52.8% allowed effective field goal percentage. So this mark from Indiana, like I understand that Indiana has been like has played well against Boston. You know, they kind of split a little bit during the season series. Even then, Indiana over the course of the entire regular season, like all those matchups against Boston, were at a 52.1% effective field goal percentage against Boston. So like they really like shot incredibly, and that's why they were able to stay in the game, because the turnovers were awful for them. Like they had so many turnovers. I think that your inclination is right. Basically, they had a lot of possessions that ended in makes, and then they also had a lot of possessions that didn't end in a shot, because like all those turnovers, there's no shot happening. Those are all opportunities. Those are all like extra opportunities for guys to grab boards, especially a guy like Tatum. So I like that angle a lot. And I think maybe it saves you a little bit of juice. But also, like, you know how guys are, like, they want to get that 10th rebound. They want to get the double double. Maybe they don't care about getting 11. Maybe they don't care about getting 12. Sometimes like they're just not, you know, they're not as hungry, like whether it's conscious, subconscious, whatever. I don't mind.
Whenever like, so like, this is the thing too, like this is where it comes. And like, I always talk about watching the games. I remember taking it too against the Cavs Celtics. I was taking his rebounds, Tatum's rebounds. And then you see a clip like going into a timeout break and, you know, entering in, you know, when like they mic up the players, like what they talk about on court. There was a clip of Jaylen Brown talking to Jason Taysom. He's like, come on, man, get those rebounds. We've got to grab those rebounds. So like he's encouraging him to grab rebounds.
Yeah, I think it's a fascinating spot for you. And like, I think it's a fascinating spot for like this angle, because like when we look at what Indiana was able to do, it's just like they just either didn't miss or turn the ball over. So I really like the spot for Tatum.
He had 11 rebounds and then didn't even include overtime. So the line's 10.5. I just think line, you know, I just think the rebound line probably is the better way because it's plus odds.
Yeah, no, I think that makes a lot of sense here. The other thing that I wanted to touch on, because I think that this type of market is interesting, right? These markets we got them in the regular season a little bit. But it was usually just like scoring leader, which. I've hit a couple of them before. Like we had that one herder, like 100-1, which was sick. I've hit them a couple times but it's usually like where I'm like, well, I'm between like these two guys, like whatever. The Naz Reid one was really cool. I think these markets are really interesting, right? Especially for like the rebounds, but then even more so, I think for assists, because I think assists have generally like lower totals. I think it's a little bit more variable. With this type of market, like I always think you can kind of invite variance in for a variety of different reasons, because like you're kind of betting on a lot, like you're betting on a lot of things, kind of like all at once, which is weird. But I do think there's some opportunity to find a lot of value here. So like, I think like what you're talking about with Tatum makes a lot of sense, because we're like, look, we think Indiana is going to regress, shooting the basketball. Tatum is like the clear number one rebounder on the Celtics. Mm-hmm. It's a way to maybe get his rebounds prop at like a discount, like whatever. So I like the way that you're approaching the Tatum angle. From like an assist angle, looking at this game, right, you can bet on somebody to record the most assists in the game. And I think the reason that I'm bringing this up is that obviously like Halliburton was incredible, right? Like Halliburton had 10 assists in game one, which is still like a little low. Like it can be like a little low for him, right? He had 10 assists on 20 potentials. But then two guys on the Celtics, like Derek White had 9, Drew Holiday had 8. If we look at their odds for game two to lead the game in assists, Halliburton's -140, Tatum is +450, Derek White +750, Drew Holiday +900, Nembhard 11-1, McConnell 11-1. When I'm looking at this type of market where I'm like saying like, well, I think that Indiana should regress for X, Y, and Z reasons, then Tatum, I don't think is priced right. Like, there's not enough upside there for me. But with two guys like Derek White and Jrue Holiday, where we're saying they should be really involved in the offense, I don't mind sometimes like maybe playing both of them and saying like, well, I'm going to split like half a unit on both or like a quarter unit on each, because I think that like combined, you'll get like, I guess it'll be like plus 250 or so, like really like closer to plus 300 ish. Right. On the two of them, and like saying like, I think like one of them, I think at least maybe one of them could lead the game and assist based on what I think is could be like Indiana regression. These types of markets, especially assists, right? Because the totals are lower, I think that it creates like a little bit more variability there.
And also, like, there's Siakam some opportunity. Too. Don't get me wrong. Like Siakam could also be one of those guys as well.
He's 30-1.
Yeah.
So, you know, like I like some of these markets I think are interesting, like for kind of taking some dart throws. And also, I think that in the playoffs in particular, I think it's particularly interesting. And the reason I say that is we can see, like, you know, we try to bet a lot of times, like I give out bets on series leader. And I'm like, I think this is going to play out over the course of the series because this player is the best scorer in the series. They're like, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. But on an individual game basis, I think that we can find a little bit of value here just saying like, well, you know, this could be a pivot in this game. Or like, I think that this team might get their doors blown off. And there's a couple different ways to kind of handle that. So that was kind of where my brain was at. And just if you had any thoughts on betting leader markets in like on a game to game basis, as opposed to, you know, as a way to kind of throw like a dart out there, it's I would say it runs parallel to a ladder in a way, because like you're betting on an alt, but the highest rung of it could just is really just depending on the game flow.
So what, like if I really have this high lean on Derek White as his assists at 4.5, let me take the 6+. Let me take the series leader, and then let's look what you're saying. Like whatever that is, like you're getting like the max value. That makes sense.
Because I think that like looking at it right, like. Derek White, he's 12, for example, right? He's 12-1 to lead the series in assists because Halliburton is Halliburton. And like over the course of a series, I think you could see Halliburton. It's going to play out in a way that he's going to lead the series in assists. That's just he's double digit assists almost every game. But if for some reason, like I see something like matchup wise and I'm like, I kind of like this here, or I think maybe they were doing something to frustrate Halliburton, Derek White's plus 750 to lead in assists in one game. I don't think it's insane, especially given the fact that we've seen Halliburton's assists kind of regress like a little bit in the playoffs. Like he hasn't had those like 17, 18 assist type of games where he's totally running away with it. So just some things for you guys to play around with, you know, throughout
the series. I also, to be honest with you too, I liked it didn't really happen in game one, but I think there's some serious upside of it because it hasn't happened yet for Tatum to hit his threes. Like, I am telling you, like, mark my words, there's going to be one game in this series where Tatum is the game leader in three-pointers made.
I think
it's the ISO pull-up for me, you know?
Yeah. Dude, Bontemps, I never heard somebody say it, but I love it. He called them sundial threes. And he was saying, like, that's what it looks like. He's at the top of the key, completely wide open, and he's just missing them. And I think you're right. Like those are going to start falling and it's going to really change, you know, and make Boston's offense.
That I think has value. Like, it was minus 140 going into, actually it was minus 160 going into game one. Now I think it's minus 115.
Yeah.
He shot 18, he had 8 attempts and he only had 2 going into halftime. 6 of them came in the second half.
Yeah, I'm seeing like 2.5 minus like 115 or so. And then you can get 4+ is plus 200, and then 5+ is like plus over plus 400. So I don't hate it. And the one thing about Indiana is they have done a good job throughout the course of the season of limiting 3-point attempts because they're not really doubling. They're not really sending help, like whatever. They kind of stay home and their guys. But usually the looks that they do give up are high quality looks. And teams do continue to shoot pretty well on those. It's just that like they're such a sieve almost defensively.
I just don't know like the competition. Siakam doesn't shoot them. Like Derek
White. Halliburton,
and I guess, you know, Tatum and Derek White are like the three guys, the three competition guys. Because aside from that, they're removing Hauser, you know, so.
I mean, I think he's kind of removed. Obviously, Al Horford is shooting a ton of threes
Horford threes. I mean, like, did you see how many attempts he had? Like,
yeah, like it's like there's always like a couple angles like that. So, and threes in particular, like when somebody gets hot, it's like, oh, they're jacking, and like you can win this market with four made threes. So that I always think that like threes in particular, like we were talking about assists before, but even threes are even more variable, I think. So I think it's always like it's worth throwing a little bit on like longer shots here, you know, instead of saying like, all right, it's like, look, if this guy gets hot, like he's going to get hot. So I always think that that's definitely a fun angle. Do you have anything left on this game? How many games do you think this series goes?
Celtics in five or six.
That sounds about right. I really struggle to see this series going seven. I just don't see it.
I don't know. Like, are they going to like, how are the, it just depends on how the Pacers come out. Are they going to want to just, are they like pissed and come out game two like angry, or are they just gonna like roll over their backs and just like give up, you know, like just that demoralizing loss? And
My inclination in game two, my lean was honestly like Celtics -9. That was my inclination. Just like I'll put it this way, Indiana was, I think like literally the hardest game that Boston has had to play, period, in the last like month, because I understand that like Cleveland, they won a game, Miami wins a game, like, and those things just kind of happen. Miami's just purely shooting variance. Like Spoelstra just hit, like turned the crank on the variance machine like all the way up to 99 and was like, literally shoot a million threes. And like, you know it, like you're a Heat fan, you know what he did that. And then and then even the Cavs, they kind of did the same thing. So
that's what I was saying, though. Like, Pacers do have the shooters, though. Like, the
shooters can do it.
They compare it to like the other two teams. Like, it does make a little bit of sense.
But it just feels like, unless they're going to do it consistently, and like it felt like if they were, because game one was that, like they turned the ball over too many times. And I think that's kind of what sunk them. But game one was one of those games that, you turn the variance up, you're making all these shots, you got to win it. And then they didn't. That's a little bit of a concern for me there, but
I think it just comes down to like the Pacers, like the pace right now without Porzingis. I mean, it's essentially who's going to be the third guy for the Celtics that steps up. Is it Horford? Is it Derek White? Or is it Holiday? You know, like if they shut down Derek White, then you could always, then we've seen Drew Holiday able to step up also with Al Horford. With the Celtics, it's an easy switch. It's an easy adjustment. Just run them off the 3-point line, you know, like it's simple as is. So that's why
it's like come attack in the paint. Celtics, we'll call it a day.
Yeah. Celtics have the easier time with the adjustments.
Yeah. I think that's a good point. I want to touch on game two for Minnesota Dallas, right? Okay. So obviously, like, we don't have a ton of lines up for this yet, but I want this podcast to have more than, you know, like an 18-hour shelf life, right? So we'll touch on it a little bit. We got the same spread. It's Dallas +4.5, Minnesota's -4.5 at home. The total is the same. It's 208. I don't see any player props up like
I do see some.
Maybe FanDuel.
FanDuel has some. Yep.
Okay. FanDuel, so we're seeing
McDaniels 12.5 points when he scored 23 points last game.
That seems crazy. You know, he's going to shoot him. Like, and that's a shot I think that Dallas is going to let him take, right? So you can get for him, his threes line is 1.5.
Oh my God. Wow.
That's enticing. You know, Luka is again at 28.5. Kyrie got bumped up a little bit. Let's see, from a rebounds perspective, they dropped Gobert down to 11.5 now after whatever he did in game one.
And I like, you know what I like? I like Ant Edwards' assists. I noticed five a lot. And a half. A lot of the time, yeah, that was another one of my leans I liked. Like the Derek White going into game one was also Ant's assists, 5.5. Yeah, a lot of the times they were trapping him. In the second half, like he was just kind of being a little bit passive, letting Cat and McDaniels do some of the work. So I like the over 5.5 assists. That's a good one.
Yeah, I was looking at, you know, Luka had 8 assists. It felt like he could have had a lot more, honestly. Just based on the way that they were doubling him. I wonder if they're going to do a little bit of that. I'm interested. What do you think? Okay, so Kyrie was 12 of 23 shooting, played 40 minutes. I think that, like, obviously, like, they kind of need him to be a scorer to a degree, but he, like, really has not hit, like, that 23.5 line. It feels a little high just based on what he's been doing. Do you think it's worth maybe like fading him a little bit here, coming off that game? Like his points line was 21.5. His points line was 21.5 in game one, bumped it to 23.5. Obviously, like he kind of eclipsed that in the first half of game one, but at the same time in the second half, he barely scored in the second half. Do you have any thoughts on, you know, on Kyrie?
I think that's an all right line. I think the game plan Timberwolves are probably going to keep riding with is just let the two players combine all the points and then just shut down all the other options. Because like PJ, PJ isn't scoring that much, like some of those, it's like the math equation. Like if, you know, it's this is being taken away, where is that going to be going towards instead? And Kyrie is kind of like picking up. I mean, what was his usage rate though? Because that's kind of what I'm kind of.
Let me see if it's up yet or not. Because I didn't see it up yet. Let's see if Clean the Glass updated it yet. They didn't update
it. Yeah, he had a 30.7% usage rate last game yesterday.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's not insane for him. Like, that's not unreasonable.
12 for 23, though, but okay, let's see. In the first half, 12 for 23, but in the first half is what you're saying. 11. Oh, like, whoa. So you're saying he had only one field goal made in the second half? I didn't even realize.
That's what I'm saying. So, like, I don't know. Like, from my perspective, like, looking at this, I'm like, okay, like, what, like, I don't, like, and, you know, like, I haven't gotten to rewatch the game. I know you haven't gotten to rewatch the game.
He went 1 for 9 the second half, though, you know?
He was going crazy in the first half and then just fell apart. Like, there was nothing in the second half. So that's why I'm like, is this 23? Like, I get that he finished with 30. He was 6 of 6 from the free throw line. He doesn't miss his free throws. Like, that's just something Kyrie does. What are our thoughts here? Like, to me, the 21.5, it seemed a little low. At the same time, we look at what he did in the second half here, and it's like, all right, like, I get that he scored 30, but the most recent, like, taste in my mouth for, like, you know, or taste in your mouth for, like, lack of a better word, is just like, he didn't perform, he didn't show up in the second half. And 23.5 is a line, if we're looking at the playoffs here, he's only hit that in 4 of 13 playoff games at 23.5. Game one against the Clippers, game four against the Clippers. I guess this is game.
Yeah, well, a little bit different, though. I mean,
it was really all against the Clippers. He didn't hit it ever against Oklahoma City. I know it's matchup, like,
yeah, based it's all matchup at the end of the day. I mean, I think you can kind of throw away the Thunder footage. Like, they're defending him differently. I think it's more so like straight up defense rather than like zone, you know, kind of like.
Yes.
Deep zone defense on Kyrie and give up the corner three. Like I said, I just saw he went 1 for 9 in the second half. Maybe there was a little bit more upside and he could have finished with 34 points instead of 30.
Yeah.
As just like another alternative viewpoint. And then let me see. Yeah.
It just seems a little odd.
I feel like it's a fair line. I feel like it's a fair line. I feel like people are going to look into the last game and blindly bet the over, but then not see the full story, like what you just pointed out.
And that was kind of where I'm adjustments coming from. Because I'm like looking at it, and I'm like we talked about this a little bit, like at the beginning of the show, and we talked about how, you know, it's like you see these lines, you see these props they're put out, and it's like you see it like every game, and it's like, all right, this is the same line. Like Luka's prop is the exact same prop. It's 28.5, like almost identical juice, and they're just like, this is the prop again. Kyrie's changed, and 20 and sometimes half. Like, you know, it changed from like 20.5, 21.5 to 23.5, which is a fairly significant jump, like in terms of like percentage, whatever. Sometimes, like, to me, it's like, all right, like this guy had a great game. Is this an opportunity now to maybe try to fade him? Or is this the books adjusting properly? And it's like, maybe it's not an under, but it's definitely maybe more of a stay away here because, like, yeah, I don't want to touch this.
This is probably a stay away. I don't think this is an under. I also don't think this is an over. I think this is let's just wait. Let's just see one more game footage of how he's going to be attacking the series. Is he going to be more of a scorer? And maybe we may miss out on like a lower line that we could have gotten in game two going into game three, but at least we have more clarity, you know?
Yeah, because I think that like sometimes, especially because of what happened in the second half, there are certain times where I'm like, nope, not touching it. Like I don't want any part of that. It's a little bit too. It makes me a little bit too nervous.
No, I was gonna say, like, I just think in general, like for anyone who's still listening right now, game twos are very like easy to be trapped and like overreact to. So don't like. Whatever you see in game one, like, don't think it's going to be replicated again. Like, there are going to be adjustments, and don't overreact.
I agree. And speaking of that, one player that I am curious to know your thoughts on, because I want to bet the over, like right now, is Karl Anthony Towns. 19.5 points was his game one line. And right now we're looking at Kat is his points line is set at 19.5 once again. 16 points in game one was not a good shooting performance for Kat. He really struggled, but he was 6 of 20. He took 20 shots, which is a lot. That's a lot of shots, even for Kat. He averages about 15 shots a game. Over the course of his last like 10-ish games, over the course of the playoffs or so, for him. Actually, I'll pull it. For the playoffs, he is averaging 13.8 field goal attempts. He's had some low some low games against Phoenix, a low game against Denver, but 20 is actually the most he's taken in any game during the postseason. I don't know if that's in part because of some of the coverage that they were throwing at Ant, who kind of had a difficult offensive game scoring the basketball. But I could definitely see that happening again, given the fact that Kat struggled, Ant struggled, and like basically, you know, Dallas can say, make your shots. Otherwise, we're not going to change the scheme. So 19.5 points for me for Kat, like, dude literally has to score 1 point per shot attempt if he's going to take 20. And he's such a good shooter. He was 2 of 9 from three. And a lot of the looks were relatively open. I think the line's a little low at 19.5.
What's his 3 points given the volume line?
He was 2 for 9. 2 for 9.
Is his 3-pointers line like 2.5 or 1.5?
I'll tell you.
I'm on board with you on Towns, the over, to be honest with you, because
it's 1.5 minus 180.
For the first time, this is the thing, right? Like the first time in the playoffs, Ant is driving in a rim protection that's actually good. Like last series, Jokic really didn't care so much about him. I mean, he had Aaron Gordon chasing him. Series before that, Nurkic, he's all right, better. But then you have Lively and Gafford. You saw what they were doing with
shot blockers.
Yeah.
And Derek Jones Jr. is pretty solid defensively too. So, I think because I bet on Karl Anthony Towns to win MVP, Western Conference Finals MVP. It was 20-1 before Game One. I probably should have waited because I liked Dallas in Game One. So if you didn't get it, I really don't mind betting it again, to be honest with you, because you're going to get a better number just based on the fact that they lost Game One. Even though that was kind of an anticipated outcome given some of the Game 7 trends, stuff like that. But I think that this is a good spot for Cat. Like, I think that he's the guy.
I think that PA could be solid. Did you see in the game twice, they gave Cat the ball like inside the paint and he did an alley-oop to Gobert? Did you notice that?
Yeah. That was nice, actually. That was nice. And that was all he had. He only had 2 assists in this game. I think they were both to Gobert. I think that was really all he got. So that was kind of why I was like, I just generally leaned that way. He only had 7 rebounds as well. His rebounds prop is at 8.5. I just think the points is kind of the way to go at 19.5. It's a number he can definitely hit. And I just think that the volume was insane in Game One. And given the fact that he didn't convert, like, it actually makes me like it more because I'm like, I think that we should see that replicated again in Game Two.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm going to keep that. I'm going to keep that in the back of my head for sure. I want to wait and see. My thing is that I like to see like the shot dashboard. It's not out yet, but on NBA.com, you can see exactly like where the shots are being taken. And like, if it's just like misses where, or like shots that he should have made, that normally helps my decision too. I also, just to remind the viewers, Kyle Anderson's PRA is something that I'm also looking into as well.
Oh yeah,
he seems to have a role in this series, and especially like kind of playmaking too. You know, he was kind of taking the ball out of Edwards' hands, like dribbling up the ball a lot in Conley's absence.
And I think they needed that, right? So Kyle Anderson played 17 minutes. He had 11 points, 2 boards, 2 assists, was 1 of 3 from 3. I saw a tweet. It was so funny. It said that Kyle Anderson's shot looks like it's waiting for 2-factor authentication. And I was cracking up because it's just so slow. But I think that you're right. Right. So that's 15 PRA.
I have a feeling it's probably going to be like 6.5 next game.
What's your cutoff point? Like, where do you think that it doesn't have any value? Like, not as soon as you, like, if you hit a double digit, like 10.5?
I don't think it'll be 10.5. I think it'll probably be
it'll be crazy reaction. Yeah, I think it'll be too much.
9.5 would be my cutoff point. 9.5, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I think that that's fair. I think that the matchup looks like okay for him, and I think that even defensively, like, his minutes on Luka aren't bad just because he's bigger. Like, he's a bigger body, and Luka's not like a fast dude. So a guy named Slow-Mo isn't necessarily like the worst kind of option to cover him. So do you have any final thoughts on Dallas, Minnesota before I obviously ask you for a Pods and Rex before we get you out of here?
Oh my god, I didn't come into this thinking about a Pod and Rex. I hope that the Timberwolves come back. I honestly, my initial gut is to take the Timberwolves spread for Game Two. I think they're going to come back with answers. I'm hoping that Nikhil Alexander-Walker gets a little bit more run. I really was shocked that he didn't. I think he just needs to hit his shots and he'll get more, and it'll be so helpful. I want to wait and see what's going on with Kyrie. I want to see if that's for real or not. He's a scorer. And then for Celtics Pacers, I think that it should be a good one. I think that could be a blowout too, you know?
Yeah, I'm excited to see both these games. I selfishly, as like an NBA lover, and like I'm sure you are too, obviously, but I selfishly kind of want these series to go 7 games just so I get more opportunities to watch some of these teams play, watch some of these players play. But you know, we'll just kind of have to see how it shakes out, because Game 7s are a lot of fun. It's really interesting to just see like how the series develop and all the nuance that's there. So actually, you guys that obviously follow my written work. I'm going to be covering the rest of the Timberwolves Mavericks series for Action moving forward. I'm going to be writing every game guide from here on out.
There you go.
We're going to get a little bit of I kind of got to pick your brain a little bit to help me write my guide for game two, because I'm going to get to kind of talk about some of these angles that we talked about on the podcast and kind of flesh them out with a little bit more data, which is nice. So obviously this takes us to Pods and Recs. I know that I'm hitting you like a little bit off the cuff, but I'm certain that you have something that's interesting. I'll give you a couple minutes to think about it though, because I'm going to give my recommendation. Okay. I've been on like this London broil kick. I don't know what it is about it, but like I've been loving buying a London broil, and this isn't an ad either. And I think I've talked about this before, but I have this thing called the Meter, and my brother-in-law got it for me. It's actually the Meter Plus, and it's a Bluetooth. It's like a wireless meat thermometer, and it's really nice because you obviously you can put it in the meat, and it links with your phone. There's an app for your phone, and you can say like what you're cooking, what the meat is, like whether it's like beef, chicken, lamb, whatever, pork. You can say what cut it is, so you can go to like London broil, you go to filet, you go to ribeye, like whatever, because obviously they all have slightly different fat contents, and that changes the way that it cooks. And you can set the temperature that you even want it cooked on to the degree. So it's not just like rare, medium, whatever. You can actually say like, oh, I want it like, you know, it's like, I like medium rare, but sometimes it's just like a little bit, or like, I like rare, but sometimes it's a little bit too, like too under. You can go a little bit over, you can go in between medium, or you can go in between rare and medium rare. It's awesome. I really like it. The reason I say this is that it ties in really well with London broil, because I think that London broil is kind of one of those cuts. And I've been splurging. And when I say splurging, I'm not really splurging, but like I like the oyster cut a little bit better. So I found out the oyster cut is a piece of the London broil, and they actually take it like it's closer. It's like off of the hip bone of the cow. You guys are learning a lot here. I'm giving you plenty of time to think of yours. So the reason I like this, it's got a little bit more of like intermuscular fat, and that helps keep it tender, whatever. But when you have the meter, the thing that's helpful here is that you can actually cook it to the right temperature, because London broil is kind of one of those cuts. You don't want it well done. It gets too chewy. It's not really any good anymore. And obviously, I'm not going to get into the well done thing. I feel like, you know, whatever, you eat your meat however you like it. But that particular cut, I think, gets a little bit too chewy. So with the meat thermometer, I'm able to really nail it down and get it exactly right. So had a fantastic London broil tonight. And I hope I'm going to have some leftovers tomorrow. Maybe I'll do it with a little eggs or something, or throw it on a sandwich for lunch. And I think that it's a great cut of meat. It's not super expensive, not breaking the bank. I think that you guys will be able to enjoy it. So that'll leave you to yours here.
No, I mean, I'm not really more, I don't really, I'm not like the best like cook myself. I just do like the meal prep stuff. I just order
meal prep
and I just like pop it in the oven and do 2 minutes. I guess I'll do one. I've been going to the gym a lot lately. After my workouts, regardless of like what kind of area I'm hitting, I've been loving to doing the stair machines. I like them. I like doing them. I think that has a lot of benefits. I think like if you're targeting your biceps or you're targeting like your triceps and you do a stair machine, like it kind of like focuses like the tension on like a different muscle. This way, like you're not like leaving the gym sore on your triceps. I think it's good just for like your glutes. This is like on top of my head stuff and cardio and like losing weight. I kind of been doing it for like 15 minutes. I like run a podcast like while I'm doing it, you know, or like something just to keep me going. And I think it's like a nice way to cool down. Nice little,
you don't have to sell me on a stair machine. I love the stair machine when I get the opportunity to go to the gym these days. With the new boy, it's a little rough lately. But I got my setup over here, so I'm able to do some stuff. But look, the nice thing about the stair machine, is that, you know, like you're always going up the rung. And one of the ways that you can find out like the best ways to go up the rung and the best ways to climb the ladder, or so to speak, is if you have a tool like props.cash at your disposal.
There you go.
props.cash, one of the best prop tool in the market. You can get it for 25% off with code DELERA25. Again, it's got the NBA, WNBA, MLB, NHL. It's got every sport that you can imagine with all of their stats and even some of their projections as well. And like I said, you can get that for 25% off your first month with code DELERA25. So Prop Bomb, it was a pleasure having you on. We'll have to get you back again soon maybe for the NBA Finals.
NBA drafts. We could even do Olympic stuff, like Olympic basketball.
Oh, well, you know we're down for Olympics. You know we're down for Olympics. So it's going to be a blast, and it's a pleasure having you on, as always. Let's continue.
Let's continue. Yeah, yeah.